Caduceus Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So, stay with us and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, Being the Observer, Part 2. And before we get started, I'd like to give some credit to Alice Bailey, the founder of the Lucis Trust organization, and Lucis Trust sponsors this show. And Alice Bailey, who founded the organization, wrote 24 volumes of literature, and the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear in the show comes from the works of Alice Bailey, as does the following thought. The soul has no age from the standpoint of time. It is timeless and eternal. Before the soul, there passes the drama of outer existence. But in time and space, the soul ever preserves the attitude of the onlooker. It observes and interprets. And before we get started, and before I ask a question, I'd just like to, maybe you can recap our previous show. This is part two, and maybe some people would like to refresh their memories.
Well, as I was listening to you give that opening thought, it occurred to me that it's really saying the soul is, what is the word, bifurcated, divided into? Did I just make up that word? Is that a real word?
Hey, look, you said it, therefore it's a word.
It says, before the soul there passes the drama of outer existence, but in time and space the soul ever preserves the attitude of the onlooker. I think that's a distillation of what being the observer is. It doesn't mean that you stand on the sidelines of life and refuse to participate, refuse to feel, refuse to experience, refuse to deal with the ups and downs that inevitably are part of life on Earth. That would be just tuning out and opting out of the human experience. So we're not saying that's the goal, but while one is living the life of the human being on Earth, there is another aspect to it, the soul, that remains ever aloof and above the fray. And all of us have the potential to live that dual existence. We talked last time about sometimes when one is in the midst of the most enormous, intense crisis, it's possible to remain conscious and separated from what is happening on the outer plane and aware and deeply calm. Probably many of our listeners have had that experience. Oddly enough, that kind of detachment sometimes comes in the midst of the worst crises, when one is really fearful or challenged in some way. I think that's when the soul especially pays attention, becomes alert, is available to us in crises. That's why the Aegis Wisdom views crises as so potentially productive, because then we call upon resources that ordinarily we don't draw upon when life is going along swimmingly. But in the midst of a real crisis, one can find there is a level of consciousness, a level of experience, where one is lucid and clear and alert and not suffering, even though part of one is suffering deeply.
And it's the ability to step back and not identify with that suffering, or with the suffering that's going on in front of you, perhaps. And because once you become involved with what is happening too deeply, if you become identified with it, then you're a part of it and you can't really make a sound judgment. You can't really see what's going on. You're in the thick of the battle and you have to be able to stand back and see the whole battle and the whole problem, and then you'll see more of the solution. And usually that solution lies, as we say, at the level of the soul. It's a more divine stage, a more higher. It's part of your higher self. It's what you really are in your inner self, your higher self, and it's withdrawing to that position,
which is timeless and eternal.
Right.
In other words, I think it's the awareness that whatever is happening to one on the outer level, there is some part of one's self that knows that the soul endures.
And that's what we have to rely on. It's pretty hard, you know, in the beginning when you're just going through a period of crisis, not to get caught up in it. And it's very difficult to step back, because at first you might think that's a position of non-caring,
mm-hmm.
But it isn't that. It's just the opposite, in fact. You care so much. You are involved, but not to the point of losing your identity.
And unfortunately, sometimes there's misunderstanding about this when you have a family member or a friend who's going through crisis and wants understanding and sympathy. Sometimes they expect you to suffer with them, to enter into the misery with them. And if you don't do that, then they feel that you don't understand and you don't sympathize, you don't feel compassion. But in fact, if you were to be pulled under by the wave of emotion and despair that the person is feeling, you couldn't help them. Keeping some distance mentally, keeping a perspective that allows you to stand back and observe what's happening, can sometimes enable you to give the person another perspective, some wisdom, some point of view that might help them. But you can't do that if you're right in the midst of the mess with them. But unfortunately, that's misunderstood sometimes. This is a point we talked upon about last time, that being the observer is a means of service, not only to family and friends, but it's a service that we can render to humanity as a whole. In other words, if we can get some distance from what's happening in the world today, we can perhaps build a thought form, as the Age of Wisdom would put it, begin to build a thought form of solution to the present problems. I think that in this country recently we've been through a real struggle to understand what the election meant, what it signifies. And in reading all the different letters to the editor in newspapers and magazines, I've been struck by how hard people have been struggling to understand. And I think that's an attempt to be the observer, not to just give in to saying, well, the people that voted differently than I am are wrong and they're stupid. There are a lot of people that with real goodwill have tried to make sense of it and see some higher purpose.
And it's very difficult, because it isn't readily apparent, I don't think, in what the media is and the polls come up with aren't necessarily the whole story. And so it's really calling on your own intuition to really see this whole question in some larger context, because there are energies and forces working out in the world and through this country and through every country, and these have an inevitable effect and depends on the focus of a particular group of people or a nation, and where their focus is that determines how these energies work out.
In fact, the writings of Alice Bailey say that war is an explosion of forces.
Mm-hmm.
It's a depiction on the outer planes of forces and energies that are in collision. And when we think of that, maybe it can help us make some sense of what's happening in the Middle East. that conflict, which has raged for decades and is especially intense now, is representative of something, and trying to stand back and see some of the playing out of human desire and human aspiration and human separatism can help us to understand what the solution might be.
And yes, I think we've mentioned before that we're in a transition stage between two major cycles of energies, and the last 2,000 years and the next 2,000 years coming, and there is a kind of a clashing of the energies, because each of these ages has a different focus and a different quality that is being worked out here. Not everybody can see it from that point of view, but that's one thing we get from studying the ageless wisdom teachings. We get a sense of these energies that are working out in the world, and that's the value of reading the Alice Bailey books, of course. You begin to get a different picture of what's really happening here. So it's a plug for buying one of the Alice Bailey books. So,
but there are cycles. That's what comes through her writing. There are cycles, and there are ebbs and flow of energy that work out in human history. And when we get some distance, we can see this too shall pass, for one thing.
That's right.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, Being the Observer, Part 2. And, Dale gave me a good segue into this. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company for you, and it's on one of our books, Ponder on This, an Alice Bailey book. Ponder on This is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. It's a wonderful way to get started. I got started with the autobiography of Alice Bailey, but this is certainly was wonderful for me, because I was able to peruse, ponder on this, and there are summaries of some very powerful topics that I think you might want to look at. This, you can develop a priority of topics you might want to look at, and then you can go to the other books and then explore the topics of primary interest to you in much greater detail. And the discount on Ponder on This comes in the form of free shipping and handling, so the actual cost is $16. So what you need to do is send a check or a money order for $16 to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005, and mention that you heard the offer on Inner Sight. That's a check or money order, $16 to Lucis Publishing, Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And also, a lot of people like to order cassettes. If you'd like to order a cassette of this program, title of which is Being the Observer, Part 2, send a check or money order for $5 to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And we thank you, by the way, for the support that you've given to us in the past, and we hope you continue to support us, because that's the way we stay on radio. So if you want to make a donation, send those donations in the form of check or money order to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And we also have a website, www.lucistrust.org, and you can key into all of many of our past shows. We have an archive library of past shows that you might want to listen to. And by the way, too, we have a www.wor710.com. There you can get recent shows. If you've missed one show and you want to catch it right away, you can key into that website, and WOR holds the recent shows for a couple of weeks. I'd like to return to that interesting topic, which is the Being the Observer, Part 2. And how does Being the Observer, how does it apply to present times?
Well, as Dale mentioned, we are in the midst of a shift of energy that's working out in the transition of an old age and the coming in of a new age. There's a lot of confusion, I think, in that people feel today. We sense the shift and the change in the way people are living, but we don't really know what the point of it is and where we're headed. And this, I think, is bringing out a lot of fear and anxiety in people. Even in young children, there's a sense of tension and anxiety and a lack of security. So the cultivation of the attitude of the observer can give some distance from the perplexity of life on the outer planes and the realization that the soul has no age. It's timeless and eternal. Can be deeply reassuring in a time of such transition. There's a statement in the books of Alice Bailey that I was trying to think. She said something to the effect that the soul knows that not one thing that happens to the personality, the outer being, matters in the least. That's quite shocking, because we think what happens to us on the outer levels of life, health, emotions, so on, are terribly important. And she says it doesn't matter in the least to the soul. The soul is simply concerned with the evolution of consciousness, with expanding awareness. If it takes trials and tribulation to bring about that expansion of consciousness, fine. To the soul, that's fine. We think we should be hell-bent on avoiding suffering. But the soul may not see it that way at all. The soul seeks expanded consciousness.
And every life is different, of course. The soul goes through many, many lifetimes, and we've all been through many, many lifetimes, and there are many, many more lifetimes to come. And each life, the soul has a particular plan to work out. And sometimes that plan may involve a certain amount of suffering, simply because it's trying to balance out something that happened or occurred in a previous lifetime. And if we can observe our own life this way from the standpoint of the soul, then maybe we can accept this period of suffering a little easier, a little better.
And we can gather from what you say that we're experts in suffering and dying. We've done it many times. We're also experts in joy. It reminds me of a man who had a recurrent cancer. He was interviewed once on television, and he was asked if he ever wondered, why me? Because he had struggled for years to beat back this cancer that kept coming back. And he said, no, I've never asked why me. I've had a lot of joy, a lot of happiness in my life, and that never caused me to ask even once, why me? So why should I ask why me when I'm suffering? That's, I think, expressive of the attitude of the observer. It's just part of life. And the realization that life endures and that nothing bad lasts forever can help one to climb up to onto that mental level that gives a certain amount of detachment from what's happening on the outer levels of life. I think I mentioned last time that there are some practices one can undertake on a daily level that can foster the attitude of the observer. One is the practice of meditation. Every morning, the setting aside of even 5 or 10 minutes, 15 or 20 if you wish, to meditate can build this alignment with the soul, with the inner eternal being that you are, and lift the awareness from the outer levels of life onto the more abstract and timeless levels. That can be an enormous help to you in getting through whatever the day holds in store. Another aspect is reading spiritual texts on a regular basis. That's what's so nice about Ponder on This. It offers just brief extracts. If you don't have a lot of time, read one paragraph and think about it as you get ready for your morning commute. And there's another practice called the evening review that I think is useful for cultivating the observer.
Yes, that's also it's a technique that we use in the Arcane School, in the work of the students in the Arcane School, all practice meditation, of course, and the evening review, which is simply a way of looking back at the events of the day and seeing where you might have done things a little better. Not look back and keep kicking yourself and saying, you know, saying bad things about yourself, but just stand back and look at it objectively and say, how could I have done this better? Or
what caused this?
Right.
What set this in motion?
And it's being, as we say, being very objective about it, and not to get caught up in the emotions of the time, but it's seeing how it can be done better the next time. And then there is the practice of what we call, there is also another practice called the review of the attitude of the observer. And that's another practice that we use in the Arcane School, too.
Taking one question a day at the end of the day to mm-hmm. develop this attitude of the observer. I don't know whether any thoughts will come to you, Robert, but what, for example, if one asks oneself as one retires for the night, what or who is the observer? What is under observation?
Mm-hmm.
What thoughts come to mind? What is being observed? Mm-hmm. Behavior?
Well, it's part of that evening review and observing the day, and it's an exercise that it's very helpful because what all of these exercises are doing, you know, there is a reason for them. It's like exercises on your piano. You have to practice your scales and on your instrument, and they're very boring perhaps, but they solidify your technique so it becomes automatic. And this is the same with the observer. You go through these questions, you keep questioning yourself at the end of every day, and you look at yourself objectively, and it, sooner or later it becomes kind of automatic, and when you begin to approach your whole day in a different way.
Yeah, I've used it because you've mentioned it on other shows, and I found it quite useful, and sometimes I feel guilty because I become aware. I review the day, and it's more or less I evaluate what I've done, and I think the best scenario is to learn from it and not get... I had a tendency to get stuck in it for a while and just beat myself up because of, I shouldn't have done that, or I could have done this in a better way. But Sarah mentioned to me one time that the highest form of behavior is to learn from it, to let go, and to move on. So I found it very useful in my own evolvement.
Did I tell you that? I don't practice it. I guess I just advise it.
Well, no, I think it was well said.
I'm more obsessive.
Well, you should learn it too then.
But I'm glad that advice was so wise. No, it's true. Let go of it, but learn all you can from it. Life is a teaching experience.
There are many other questions that, in fact, we have a whole list here, like 29 questions that
one can
go through. Can I observe myself mentally, unbiased by any reaction from the emotional personal self?
I'm not sure.
And that's a difficult thing, too, because to observe yourself mentally from the mental plane, that's where the soul is located, up on the higher regions of the mental plane, and so it's a technique of lifting yourself up above the emotions of the day. Perhaps you had some crisis you went through at work, and it's trying to step back from that emotional crisis and see what's really happening. Maybe try to get back at the cause of what's happening. Because this is all a technique of learning to develop the capacity to see the world from the standpoint of the soul.
I think two things that help in answering that question, can I observe myself with dispassion, is that we should have love for ourselves. A lot of spiritually aspirational people are very hard on themselves and very self-critical, and that doesn't really help. We have to know that as the soul, we are already perfected according to the ageless wisdom. On some inner level, we have already arrived at the feet of the Father, to put it in those terms. So we have to have love for ourselves, and I think another thing that helps us detach from what we observe is to know that everybody else is worthy of love. They may not be behaving as well as they should, but on some deep level we are one, and what you are observing in the other person is the expression sometimes of the not-self, the expression of the outer aspect of that person, but not who he or she really is as the soul. I find that very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the other questions that comes to mind here, it says, I am the redeemer of the lowest nature, and in what way does observation aid in this redemption? And here again, it gets back to the very basic purpose of the soul, is that redeemer and lifting up and purification and all of that that sometimes we may turn away from. And but it's exactly what we here on earth have to be doing. It's the redemptiveness, and it's the working with the Christ aspect within you, the redeeming aspect.
That kind of transforms one's attitude toward one's body. There's a statement in the Ageless Wisdom, I am the life to these my lives, and so resemble God. We use our bodies and misuse them with wrong eating, wrong activity, and so on. But you're saying that one is the redeemer of the lower nature. That would mean we have to learn to live within our bodies according to our highest spiritual understanding.
That's right, and have compassion for your body and for the little lives that are also suffering because in their own level of suffering because you're abusing your body. So you have to think of yourself as this God of this little universe, and it's your responsibility to take care of it.
One final question. What is the major hindrance to my constant practice of observation? That would be one each of us can answer. What gets in the way of my being the observer?
We have a special offer. I hope you take advantage of it. It's from Lucis Publishing Company. It's the book that Sarah mentioned a moment ago, Ponder on This. And the discount that you're getting comes in the form of free shipping and handling. So it's reduced to $16, so send a check or money order for $16 to Lucis Publishing. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And to order a cassette of this program, being the Observer, or any program that you hear, send a check or money order for $5 to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.